Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Steve Phillips, former Major League Baseball General Manager, MLB Network, will join us. We will go over the landscape of baseball, Skubal, what it's like from a GM's perspective, trading this guy, our trade talks happening now, worst trades he's ever received, trade offers he's ever received. I got a lot of fun questions to ask Steve, so excited to talk to Steve as we are just about at the midpoint season of Major League Baseball here. I would say the one thing, I mean, I'll get to my thoughts on the draft here just because I wasn't on since the draft happened. Yeah, we've had some moves since then. The one bet I would make in baseball, talked a little bit about it with Gil on the Monday show. The Phillies around 3-1 to win the division to me is a pretty good bet. They have played well here. They're in action as I'm speaking now against Washington. Atlanta has really cooled off, and you can get Philly. I'm looking plus 275, plus 300. Still a lot of time to go here, and still, and not that much ground to make. I mean, 4.5 games entering play on Thursday. That's with half the season left. 4.5 games is not a lot, and Philly's playing well. We'll see, who does what at the deadline. I keep thinking Skubal is a very sneaky Philly team just because Dombrowski, the Philly GM, has, and I made this point probably too many times, but has had a habit, a reputation for not really caring about prospects, going all in, just kind of going all in, let it burn to the ground and go on to the next team. Did that with the Red Sox, did it with a few teams. But it would make sense. Schwarber, Turner, Harper, all those guys a little older. Wheeler's a little older. Just kind of go for it. Shoot your shot. Line up Skubal, Sanchez, Wheeler in a playoff series and take your shot at it. And go that direction. So we'll see where Skubal ends up, and excited to get Steve's thoughts on that. We'll talk to him in just a minute. But just quickly wrap up NBA draft, the Giannis stuff. Haven't been on since that stuff, happened. Giannis got traded later that night. I mean, look, I thought the Boston offer was better. I thought he was going to Boston. I was wrong. Sounds like the owner stepped in last second and said, I don't want to deal this a year from now with Brown. Let's just take the pile of stuff. Even if it's not great stuff, we'll bet on Miami to maybe be bad. We'll get their picks. We'll take some of these players we got from Miami. We'll trade them for other stuff. So I don't buy this idea that Miami's a contender. I don't think most people do. 4 or 5 seed, probably win a round. If I had to guess right now, like stage of elimination, probably lose in the second round, something like that. I mean, injuries can always change things for better or worse. And we got to see Giannis play some games too. Giannis is going to be 32 a month or two into the season. I think turns 32 in December, which is funny. We always round up with people's age when you want to make a point. When we want to make a point, I'm guilty of it right now. It's like, well, he's going to be 32 in 6 months. Well, he's 31 right now. I get that. But he is going to be 32 pretty quickly into the season. He's been hurt a ton. And he's going to go to a team that needs him and needs to be carried. Now, it's not, I've heard people say, well, it's the same thing as being in Milwaukee. It's not, because they didn't have anyone as good as Adebayo in Milwaukee. But you get the idea. It's Giannis. It's Adebayo. It's not a lot of shooting. It's not a lot of other guys. They're going to really, they put yourself in a position where if you can just hit on one other player, beg, borrow, or steal, just a draft pick, which you don't have too many of, but a draft pick, a trade, you develop one guy blossoms out of nowhere. All of a sudden, you got Adebayo, you got Giannis, and you got, a third player. Maybe, I wonder down the line, and it probably won't do it right away, probably won't do it at all. Could you flip Adebayo? Could you flip Bam for somebody that fits better with Giannis that can shoot and balance your roster more? I'm not sure. But to me, he kind of a fringe contender, 4 or 5 seed, something like that. I think that would be like a fair over-under for what seed they'll be. 4.5, would you go over-under what seed they'll be? Will they have home court in the first round? I think that's kind of a coin flip. But I would say from the draft, and I did the show Sunday, I did the show Monday with Luke Swain. I wish I had more at the time. I kept saying that. Somebody knew, because Tuesday morning and really Tuesday night, the hours before the draft, the script almost started to leak. If you followed the prediction markets, Wagler 5 to the Clippers and all of these things really started to get seen. DeBonza going 1 went from minus 700, minus 500 to minus 2,500. And Fleming's to go 8 was like 3-1. That got to odds on. So somebody seemed to know something, with the exception Burries was a heavy favorite to go 9th. To Dallas with Dusty May, but Dusty May picked his old college guy from Michigan, Maurice Johnson. So that was a little bit of an upset. I mentioned it on the Monday show. Don't be surprised if May picks one of his Michigan guys. Maurice Johnson was 22-1 before the May hire. I think he got down to around 7, 8-1. I know some people that hit on it at 10-1. So that one got home. Again, he had 3 guys to choose from: Mara, Johnson, and Lindenborg. So it's not like it was that obvious where you just bet him and you can make that connection. But he does pick one of his Michigan guys. That was a little bit of a curveball, but for the most part, it was pretty chalk. I will say this, though. I think the NBA is going to, it's going in the right direction. I think the league will be better next year. What I mean by that is, yeah, Wizards, kind of a dead team for a long time. You got DeBonta, you got Trae Young. Why you're giving Trae Young that contract, I have no idea. But you got DeBonta, you got Trae Young, you got Davis for as long as he's healthy, Trae Young for as long as he's healthy. That's not a terrible team. You know, the Kings get Darius Acuff, they got Caravan from UConn. All right, they're not going to be good, but they'll be watchable. You know, you get the idea. The Bulls get Caleb Wilson. That's a team that hasn't been relevant in a really long time. That's the start of something. So, and I think the anti-tanking rules are getting these teams like the Nets trade for Julius Randle. I think you'll get back to, hopefully, from the NBA standpoint, of just getting a more watchable product night in, night out in the regular season. Kind of put the cap back in the bag. This league has just gotten out of control. I mean, I know we do a lot of it during the playoffs and here with the draft. You know, considering this time of the year, don't do a lot of it during the regular season. The regular season is just so bad. And part of it is, you know, games night to night. It's hard to do a podcast on the Wednesday night games. Well, the games are going to come and go, and then the podcast ages. So that's, I'm trying to do more big picture stuff. But maybe the league, I think the league is getting back into a position where maybe it's more watchable. These teams are trying. They're trying to avoid the relegation rules with, if you're the worst pick, you lose the draft pick or you lose the odds or whatever. So I think the league is headed in the right direction. I think the next guy to watch now is Kawhi. Sounds like the Clippers probably going to shop him around, which makes sense. I mean, you got Wagler fifth overall. You've got Garland, who's a younger player. You're not winning a championship with Kawhi. Just get some sort of draft capital, young players back. So whether it's a reuniting with the Raptors, whether it's reuniting with the Spurs, which I don't see, but boy, it'd be a hell of a team if you got Kawhi healthy with the rest of those guys. And I thought a couple winners from the draft. Boy, the Spurs, the rich get richer. The OKC to get Mara and Sturts, the kid from Iowa, Mara from Michigan. The Spurs get Terrace Reed from UConn, the other big from Kentucky. It's a hell of an arms race. But if you could ever add Kawhi to that mix and keep him healthy, and you almost just, it's tricky. Because if you load manage these guys too much, once the wear and tear, the intensity of the playoffs gets here, they don't have that. They're not ready. You almost got to build them up and get them ready. But keeping Kawhi healthy has obviously been a major, major challenge in the Clipper years, back to the Spurs years. But I would not be surprised if Kawhi goes elsewhere here and the Clippers do a full rebuild. With that being said, Wagler at 35-1 for the Clippers for Rookie of the Year. You figure if Kawhi gets traded, that's a lot of shots, a lot of opportunity, a lot of volume for Wagler at 35-1. That's not the worst bet I've ever heard. And I could certainly see that taking place. The Timberwolves trade for LaMelo Ball. Ball is not my favorite guy. He just seems like, not a lot of winning traits. He's hurt a lot, shoots a lot, not a lot of winning traits. And it's always concerning when a player, when a team trades a player and they're very familiar with them and they just kind of trade them out of nowhere and they get less than you think. And it's just like, they're anxious to get rid of them. You know, it's like somebody going up to you and saying, hey, do you want to buy my car? If it's a stranger, the first thing you're going to say is, well, what's wrong with the car? And I think that's a situation with the Hornets where, what's wrong with the car? Why don't you want this guy? And I think there are some reasons the Hornets don't want him. I get it from the Timberwolves perspective, or you know what? It's hard to compete with the OKCs and the Spurs. Let's just go for the talent play. He's big. He can shoot. He can pass. Let's hopefully get him in our building, our culture, and he can kind of fall in line. And then we just got more talent yesterday than we had today. That kind of situation. I get that. But Hornets are a team that played really well the second half of last year. And they just said, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks. Let's just get rid of this guy while we can. Let's not get that much back. Not worried about how much we get back for him. Don't want to pay him, don't want to deal with him, and just kind of, here, you can have him, which is always a concern from the team that's receiving him. So, Giannis deal, the draft, I'm not going to do too much NBA, barring, I guess, do a little summer league if that's something to bet on. That was one thing I remember last year. I loved the Hornets draft, and Matt Humans and I were doing the round two show, and the round two is a waste of time. I get why they break up round one and round two, but I don't. You got to be a pretty big NBA fan to just be sitting there watching round two of the NBA draft on that Wednesday night. Thinking the Hornets had a great draft, and I didn't put two and two together. Neither of us put two and two together and said, you know what? We love this draft. McNeely and Kalkbrenner from Creighton and Con Knipple. Let's bet them for Summer League. And they were 100-150-1, and they end up winning the damn thing. So we'll keep an eye on the Summer League, try to find a little sleeper, maybe do a show on that. But it's going to be less NBA, obviously, with the playoffs being over, the draft being over, and get back to more baseball, football previews. Mixing some World Cup here and there. And we will do some baseball coming up. Steve Phillips, former GM, excited to have him on. It's funny, I ran into Steve at the gym. And I had had him on once. We had him on once when I was doing a show, speaking of humans. I had him on once over the phone. I don't think he'd ever seen me. Over the phone with on a VEASAN show. And just ran up to him. And he was a couple, it was maybe next to me or the machine second down from me and just went up, talked to him, introduced myself. Couldn't have been nicer. And said, hey, you want to come on the podcast? And he said, sure. So he doesn't live too far from me. So excited to have Steve on. We'll get his thoughts, deadline, sleeper teams, just big picture stuff. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. He's the former general manager of the New York Mets, currently MLB Network, where he does a fantastic job, and he joins us now, Steve Phillips. Steve, a good scout, looks for talent everywhere. I was fortunate enough to bump into you at the gym. I recruited you to come on, and here you are. I appreciate you doing this. Thanks.
Happy to do it. Always glad to talk to other baseball fans that are out there.
Let's. I want to start with Skubal because we're about 5 weeks away from the deadline. Just from a former GM's perspective, take us behind the curtain. If you're the Tigers GM, if you're the other GMs, is it too early right now? Are you making calls? Are you taking calls? Is it still too early for that? What's that process like when you have somebody who's as big a chip as Skubal is?
Yeah, so it's never too early to call. I mean, I used to continuously call it, and just so, I wanted to know what was going on, right? And so many general managers will overshare at times. They'll tell you a lot about what's going on. And then there were some who would share in order to potentially pull you into a three-way or four-way trade. But I think it's you've got to start early. And what you want to do is to check in and get everybody's philosophy. What's their plan? How are they looking at themselves? And if that changes, how will they then act differently at the trade deadline? Just so that you're aware, because the one thing you don't want to do and the one thing owners don't want to hear is, oh, I didn't know. I was surprised by that. So you have to make continuous phone calls. And then in the meantime, if I'm a buyer and I'm interested in Skubal, one, I'm going to have somebody sit on him a little bit. Two, if I'm the Tigers, any team that I might consider trading Skubal to, I've got to send out and start scouting their prospects because I can't wait until, you know, the deadline this year is August 3rd. I can't wait till August 1st and say, oh, let's go check out their prospects now. You've got to do this continuous scouting, looking at players, evaluating them, and then give them a week and then look at them again. And so a lot of that has already started where the Tigers, I'm sure, are bearing down on some teams and certainly teams bearing down on the Tigers.
Where do you think he ultimately ends up?
Dodgers. I don't know that, but I think he gets traded. I know the American League has fallen back a bit and that everybody's within like 7 or 8 games of a playoff spot, but they're just not playing well enough for me. I saw a note that I think they've had 27 or 28 straight starts out of their starting pitchers where they've given up 4 or fewer runs, but they're still not a great team. They don't score enough to win those games. And so, you know, I also saw something where they're evaluating the managerial moves, pinch hitters and bullpen moves. And A.J. Hinch is ranked 30th, the worst of that group. Now, I don't think he's the worst manager by any means. I think he's one of the best. But when a manager keeps making decisions for pitching moves and they don't work, it's not because he's dumb. It's because his bullpen's not good enough. And the Tigers don't have enough swing and miss out there. And I think that in the end, there's just not enough there to limit the opposition to allow their offense to score enough. I think they come up short. I think he gets traded. And so I could see the Brewers going crazy. Look, Mizorowski and Harrison and Skubal with Woodruff in a rotation, the Phillies with Wheeler and Christopher Sanchez and Skubal would be unbeatable. So I think that the Braves, I think, would be a great place for him to go. They could really use an ace at the front of that rotation. So I think we've got a chance to be shocked. The Dodgers will be in, but I think we have a chance to get shocked by where he ends up going.
I don't really buy the Yankee stuff. I mean, and not to say anyone doesn't need school, but he's so great anyone could use him. But assuming you get Fried back, which maybe is an assumption, you got Fried, Cole, Schlittler the first 3 games of a playoff series in some order, and then Rodon fourth. I mean, that for what you're going to give up, and maybe the asking price isn't as, you know, as great as you might think, but I just don't know that that makes sense. Does that make sense to you? It just seems like, the post-George years here, it's been like the Yankees want to have their name attached to all these guys. Hey, we're in on this guy, we're in on that guy. Other than Soto a couple years ago, which was a rental. This is not the George Steinbrenner Yankees anymore where they're just getting all these big name guys. I don't necessarily buy it. Do you?
So I don't think that if I'm Brian Cashman, that's again today. Now things can change. Injuries can happen. Fried may have a setback along the way, but I still look at it and think they're in a really good spot. They could trade Dominguez and or Spencer Jones and Will Warren and Ryan Weathers, or Ryan Weathers if they wanted to, couple the outfielder with a pitcher, and that can get you Scooble. I mean, you put Spencer Jones and Ryan Weathers together, you've got a good shot at being in on the Scooble deal, and they've got other high-level AAA pitching that could let them do it. That being said, I think they could use a closer. Like, I wonder if they went to the Padres with the depth that the Padres have and say, listen, you've got Merrill Hone can close for you. Jason Adam, Estrada could close for you. Trade us Mason Miller. You get the bat. You need offense. You need power. We'll give you Dominguez and Spencer Jones. And so, I mean, I think the Yankees are in a good spot for a big move, but I'm with you. I'm not convinced starting pitching is where I would go with it. If third base is an option there, maybe there's something to consider along the way. And Matt Chapman's available from the Giants. Could I put Ryan McMahon in a deal in one of those outfielders? I'm not putting both in that deal because, you know, they want to get rid of Chapman. I don't even know if you have to go that big with them to do it. So I think the Yankees are in a very good spot, but I don't think Scooble would be my primary target.
What's the worst trade offer you ever received? Or is there one where you just said, man, I got to like laugh or hang up? Was there ever one like that?
Well, Jim Bowden, when he was the general, and I work with him now, doing a lot of stuff with him in the media. When he was in Cincinnati, there would be days I'd come in and I'd hit the voicemail on my phone, or I'd be driving in and I'd check my voicemails from the night before, not on a cell phone then, but on my office phone. And it would be Jim Bowden saying, Steve, Jim Bowden here. I'm going to make you executive of the year. I'm willing to give you, Lenny Harris for Mike Piazza. Call me. I'm going to, and it was like, he'd have these crazy ideas. Although Jim and I made a number of trades and I did get Lenny Harris from him twice. He would always call up with some off the wall idea, but he'd leave it as a message overnight. And then the one that still haunts me is that John Hart was general manager for the Cleveland Guardians, and he called me with like 10 minutes before the deadline with a trade proposal that was like Manny Ramirez, Jim Thome. I mean, it was like all of his stars and for like Edgardo Alfonso and Jay Payton and Benitez, and like in mid-season, 10 minutes before the deadline, wanted to trade like 12 mainstays on the team. My owner was in a plane flying to Europe, and I'm like, I can't, if my owner lands and I make this trade and he finds out, I may be fired before midnight. But if he had called earlier, I would have loved to explored a deal like that, because I think it could have rocked the baseball world.
What is there one that you regret? Is there a moment, either a game that didn't play out the way it did, something, 2000 World Series? Is there a move you kind of just, man, I wish I could have that one back? I'm sure everyone who's done your job has plenty of them, but is there one that sticks out?
When you make trades at the deadline, I didn't look back. I think that my view was that many times prospects get general managers fired. And the idea that, I'm going to worry about giving up a prospect, he may turn out to be a great star. Well, that's great, but it might be 3 or 4 years down the road. And the time value of talent is a lot like the time value of money, that if I can get it today and he's going to help me win today, then that has value. And my owner said to me one time that, when we fired the coaches at Yankee Stadium, we fired the coaches. It became a big controversy. And I didn't tell Bobby I was going to do it. And I didn't tell Bobby Valentine because I didn't want him to have blood on his hands, that people would think that, he fired his coaches to save himself. I didn't want to do that. It was a move I thought needed to be made. And we were 27 and 28 at the time. And when Bobby was asked by the media about it, he said, well, ask me after the next 55 games and I'll tell you whether it was the right move. Well, we went 40 and 15 in the next 55 games. And my owner said to me that was a $30 million decision, that when we traded or when we made the coaching change and it turned things around, you make more money because you're playing better. You make money in the playoffs and you sell more tickets and advertising and everything the following year, that it's a $30 million decision that we made. And so when I looked at it, I thought, all right, so if I give up a prospect and he's great and it gets us to where we want to go and it's a $30 million decision, then I'll take some part of the $30 million and go get another prospect. Now, back then, it was easier to go out in the international market and do some of those things where now they've sort of leveled the playing field. But I didn't let prospects get in the way of a deal getting done. And I, you know, I had a deal done with Jim Bowden, in fact, to get Barry Larkin in a deal. But Larkin had a no trade clause, or he was a 10 and 5 guy, 10 years of service, 5 years with the Reds. And I needed to talk to him to get him to waive the no trade clause. And he wanted a contract extension and, you know, to sign for multiple years to come play in New York. We had Jose Reyes coming. And so we talked to him a little bit. Next thing I know, Jim Bowden signed Larkin to a contract extension in my 72-hour window to negotiate with him, which is such a Jim Bowden thing to do. But and we chuckle about it now. But I, you know, I would have been interested to see how that could have played out for us, because then we had to pivot to Mike Bordick, who had played great for the Orioles and was only okay for us. And I wonder what we would have been if we did get Larkin at that time.
What went wrong with the Mets here? I mean, they were 45-24 right around this time last year, maybe a little earlier, 72-100 thereabouts since. I mean, how did this get off track so much, and how do you get it back on track? Like, where do you even start here?
Yeah, so the starting pitching tanked last year on them. And, you know, Senga disappeared, and then, you know, he's quirky that if he doesn't feel perfect, he doesn't like to pitch. David Peterson hit a wall in the second half of the season. It wasn't the same guy. Manaea was hurt and not the same guy. And so, you know, you know, I think that they as a front office have the Brewers mentality of, we don't like long-term deals for pitchers. But when you're a large market team, it's the price of doing business that you sign a starter to a 7-year deal. And you know that it might not work out, but what you do is give them opt-outs, hope the guy opts out, and then let somebody else take the back end of the deal, sign the next 27 or 28-year-old to a 7-year deal, give him an opt-out, let him opt out. So, you know, I think that, again, the pitching's not there. And everybody kept saying they're a 90-win team. I kept looking at it thinking every move they made, I thought they were less than what they were the year before. Like Jorge Polanco and Alonso, I'll take Alonso. You know, Nimmo or Simeon, I'll take Nimmo. He's a better offensive player. And yes, Simeon's hit a few home runs recently, but I still don't think that his best years are behind him. I think Nimmo still, you know, Bichette, I don't mind Bichette, but I like him at second. I don't like him at third. And I don't prefer him at shortstop. And so I just think, you know, Luis Robert, I didn't get that at all. Like, I mean, he hasn't hit in 3 years. I understand he had a good year before, but he's kind of lost. So I don't know. I didn't love their offseason like everybody else did. I think, you know, and Devin Williams, I like him, but he's not Edwin Diaz. So so I think that they've had a lot go wrong. Injury's been part of it. But I don't think they're going to dig out of a hole this year. They're going to have to retool and revamp this roster for next year and really go get some starting pitching if they want to compete.
Anything else at the deadline interests you? What do you think San Francisco does? Will they go as far as trading Devers? Logan Webb, I know it's a league where everyone's compressed, and it's amazing the American League interplay today where two teams have a positive run differential, which I don't know if we've ever seen anything like that. Just crazy. I don't know if you make anything out, but anything else from the deadline interest you? Anyone else you would keep an eye on?
Yeah, it's such a weird year because the American League has been so bad that everybody's within striking distance, and there will be teams that are both 3 games out. One's going to buy, the other's going to sell. Just because they look at themselves differently, they look at their schedule differently, they look at the playoffs differently. I think that the Giants will like to trade Devers. Nobody's going to touch him. He's got an unmovable contract, I think. And, you know, Matt Chapman, who Buster Posey signed during the season a couple of years ago, and it was the reason why they made him the general manager. Now they're going to have to trade him and eat some of that contract. So maybe it wasn't as good an idea as they thought. Willie Adames has got too much money, I think, for somebody to get crazy and sign him or trade for him for long term, unless they eat a lot of money. And if that happens, Buster Posey's in some trouble, I think. Just if he has to give out that much money, I don't know that it's going to work well for them. They'll keep Logan Webb. He has come out and said that. Buxton's going to stay in Minnesota. I think their owner believes that they're a playoff team. I don't, but they're going to keep him. The question is, will they trade Joe Ryan? They came out, made it clear they're not trading Buxton. They didn't say it about Joe Ryan. I think the Blue Jays are going to be active. They're going to get back into this mix. They believe they're a win-now team. The Red Sox will probably sell. Sonny Gray, Wilson Contreras, guys like that are probably going to be on their way out. So, you know, the White Sox are going to be interesting. I think that their fans are going to be disappointed that they don't go for it because it all happened a year too soon. But that AL Central is so hard to know. I think the Guardians figure it out and they win that division like they always seem to do. And Seattle, I think Seattle, they need more offense and they need to fortify their bullpen, but otherwise they're pretty well-rounded roster with the pitching they have there. But I think and also AJ Preller, he always does something big and he desperately needs offense. I mean, desperately needs offense. But I think we're going to see, you know, the big name pitcher move in Skubal. I think that, you know, will we see a Mason Miller get traded? Will be interesting. Does San Diego have to rob Peter to pay Paul, you know, give up the bullpen to get the offense? And I think the Braves, I think Alex Anthopoulos should go for it. He learned last year. You're not promised next year. They had a horrible season last year. Everything went wrong. Now they're back in it again. I think he understands this. Your window of these affordable contracts is going to wind down a little bit. Go for it now. I thought that they might be able to get Buxton to go back to, he grew up in Atlanta, and get Joe Ryan. And what a difference that could make for Atlanta. So I think we're going to see some intriguing trades this year.
The playoff teams in the American League, I've been asking all the guests this. It's a fun exercise. Put the Yankees in. Sounds like you'll put Cleveland in out of the Central. I think most people would put Seattle in because of the pitching out of the West. The fun comes with the three wild cards. Would you put probably Tampa in because they banked enough wins?
Yeah.
Who would be the other two?
I like Tampa. I don't think people realize Drew Rasmussen, since really 2021, good. Drew Rasmussen has the second best ERA of any starting pitcher since 2021, second to Shohei Ohtani. That's how good Rasmussen has been. And McClanahan's had some bobbles in the month of June, but I think he's going to get better. So I like Tampa Bay, and I like their offense. They find ways to score. So I think Tampa Bay will be one of the wild card teams. And then, out west, do we see Houston get in? I don't think so. Can the White Sox? I just don't feel like, I mean, I think we might have two teams right around 500 that can get into the postseason. I think Toronto gets in as one of the wild card teams. And then it comes down to maybe the White Sox, maybe if the Tigers can fight back into it. I don't think the Rangers have what it takes to get back into it. And so, I think it's dicey to think about who that third wild card team is, and it will likely be 500 or a little bit less. And I think I'm going to give the White Sox a flying chance there to be that third wild card team.
Yeah, fun team, young team, a lot of up-and-comers. They got some stuff from the Crochet deal. They were bad for a few years where all that adds up. And it's crazy to think a couple years ago, everyone was laughing at them. They were losing basically every single day, same as the Rockies last year. And it's been a quick turnaround. Last one, what do you think in terms of baseball for next year? This gets resolved, you know, in a timely manner. This is a disaster. Where do you kind of come down?
Yeah, so I think it gets resolved. I mean, I think we won't get a deal done before December 1st when the deal expires, which means that contractually they'll have to lock out so that nobody's in the facilities when they're not under contract. You don't deal with insurance issues that could happen. And then they'll negotiate. And, you know, we've seen it run into spring training before. We've seen it run into the early part of the year. We push back. I think we're going to get a full season next year. And I think that we're going to get something that both sides can be satisfied with, because there's a way to get the benefits of a salary cap for the owners that's not called a salary cap. And the way to do that is to take the player's proposal, which was obviously the competitive balance tax on the top side, and then a competitive tax on the bottom side that if you don't spend a certain level, then you get penalized for doing that. And make those penalties so stringent that it forces teams to have to spend $170 million and that they would not ever want to spend over $240 million, or it would be so crippling. And therefore, the players can say, we didn't agree to a salary cap. The owners can say, we got the same benefits of it without calling it that. And it's a win-win for everybody. So I'm hoping there's a way and a pathway to get there based upon initial proposals. But, you know, we'll wait and see with all of it. And there will be some dark days where it doesn't feel good. Like winter is coming for baseball, but I think it'll thaw out quickly on the backside.
Steve, this was great, man. Hopefully we can do it again down the road. Appreciate it. Let us know where we can find you, where we can watch you.
No, you got it. I'm on the leadoff spot on MLB Network Radio, 7 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday on Channel 89. The last hour of that is simulcast on MLB Network TV. And then I'll be on MLB Network TV on the MLB Now show, 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern time. I'll be on MLB Tonight in the evenings. And then I do some stuff with TSN north of the border, both on TV and on radio and in print on TSN.ca.
Steve, appreciate it. Thanks again, man.
Okay, you got it. My pleasure. Thanks, Will.
All right. Thank you to Steve Phillips. Thank you guys for listening. Rate, review, subscribe. We will be back on Monday, Sunday night, 11 o'clock Eastern. The pod will, if you want to watch the pod, we will be on VEASAN, but otherwise it will hit your feed Monday, 6 a.m. as usual. Rate, review, subscribe. Enjoy the weekend. See you then.